Welcome to Computing Lives, a podcast from the IEEE Annals of the History of Computing. This podcast is the third installment in a four-part series on Douglas Engelbart. This installment is called The Demonstration. Engelbart's project received its first time-sharing system in 1968. They designed their own responsive display to work with this new computer. Engelbart described it as follows. The computer and display drivers time-shared their attention among multiple 5-inch CRT screens, which happened to be the most economical size for a given percentage of screen resolution. In front of each CRT screen, we added a commercial, high-quality video camera, mounted with a light shroud over the camera lens and CRT screen. The resulting video signal, amplified and piped out into our laboratory, drove the video monitors that were our workstation displays. Two display generators, each driving up to 8 CRT screens, implemented with vacuum tube technology, were both bulky and very costly. It took 1.5 people to keep these things running all the time. The stroke-generated characters and the vector graphics allowed us to have flexible mixed text and graphic document presentations. The display generators were driven from a direct memory access channel that provided very fast creation of new display images. Now, Engelbart and the other members of his team, which had grown to 16 in size, were ready to demonstrate the system that they had invented and introduced their concept of interactive computing. They decided to risk everything by demonstrating this new innovative way of operating computers at a major gathering of computer industry, which was known as the Fall Joint Computer Conference. It was held in San Francisco in December 1968. Engelbart had to use the majority of his grant money to obtain special video projectors and microwave antennas to transmit between the lab and the conference center. Additionally, the team built modems for the demonstration. Engelbart described how the demonstration was presented as follows. We set up to give an online presentation using video projector pointing to a 20-foot screen. Brooks Hall is a large auditorium where we were giving the presentation. And that video projector could easily put up our display images so you could read them up front in the balcony. The video projector we rented, which was built by a Swiss company, used a high-tension projection lamp whose lamp is modulated by a thin film of oil, which in turn was modulated by a video signal. On the right side of the stage, I sat in our Herman Miller console. We set up a folding screen as a backdrop behind me. I saw the same image on my workstation screen, there as was projected for the audience to see. We built special electronics that picked up the control inputs from my mouse, keyset, and keyboard, and piped them down to SRI over a telephone hookup. We leased 2 microwave lines from our laboratory at SRI, roughly 30 miles away. It took 2 additional antenna on the roof of SRI, 4 more on a truck on Skyline Boulevard, and 2 on the roof of the conference center. Back in our lab, we dismantled a number of the display units in our display system so that we could use the cameras in San Francisco and SRI. We borrowed a few tripods and got some extra people to be camera people. On my console on the stage, there was a camera mounted that caught my face. Another camera mounted overhead looked down on the workstation controls. In the back room, Bill English controlled the use of these 2 video signals as well as the other 2 video signals coming up from SRI that could bring either camera or computer video. Bill could select any of these 4 video images with operational mixing and flame splitting. We had an intercom that allowed him to direct the action of the people in our lab at SRI, who were generating computer images or handling cameras sending the video up from SRI. After spending most of his grant money on the presentation, Engelbart's project would have been in financial trouble if the demonstration did not work. Fortunately, it did, and the people in the audience got very excited about developing interactive computer systems. Engelbart's demonstration showed the type of information space Bush had described in his 1945 article, and the method of interactive computing that Licklider wrote about in 1960. In the demonstration, he accessed files from the computer's memory and displayed them on a large screen in the auditorium. Then Engelbart collapsed the written text descriptions into a series of one-line headings, a basic outline. A click on the mouse would then expand the headings into larger text. Another command displayed a graphic representation of how the various documents were linked in the system. Finally, through another set of commands, Engelbart connected with a colleague located in his lab, a display on a screen of video image of his co-worker. They could see the document, see each other, and discuss the project through audio contact. In this demonstration, Engelbart showed hypertext links invented with Jeff Rolofson. Computer-supported cooperative work, video conferencing, computer graphics, sophisticated word processing. To further explain his ideas to the computer establishment, Engelbart co-authored a conference paper with English. The paper was written to be an example of the rules of hierarchy and test structuring in the augmentation system. Every paragraph started with an alphanumeric label in the manner of the classic outlining system learned by most American high school students. Engelbart in English reported that when this symbol was made dynamic by a computer processor, their design facilitated a number of varied and well-ordered perspectives on information. For example, users could check logic and completeness by requesting the screen to display statements having the same outline level of importance. They could quickly locate specific supporting material by selecting the appropriate alphanumeric heading. They could expand and tie together topics by creating a subheading at the most appropriate point in a given body of thought. Impressive as Engelbart's demonstration was, the commercial computer establishment did not think his vision of interactive computing was practical. They did not think it was realistic. Because the demonstration represented a paradigm shift from batch processing punched cards to direct information. Despite the lack of support from the computer establishment, Engelbart's NLS project continued to develop with funding from ARPA. You've been listening to Computing Lives. This is the third part of a four-part podcast about Douglas Engelbart. It's based on an essay by Susan Barnes that appeared in Volume 19, Number 3 of the Annals of the History of Computing. More about the Annals and other publications of the Computer Society can be found at www.computer.org. To find the Annals, click on the Publications tab and then go to Technical Magazines. Other Computer Society podcasts can be found at www.computer.org/podcasts. If you have any comments, you can send them to podcasts@computer.org. The music for this podcast came from the Podshow PodSafe Music Network, which you can find at music.podshow.com. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.